Hi, you're listening to the weekly podcast of Life Ministry Church. For more information, head to our website, www.lmc.org.au.
I count it a real honor to be with you this morning, and not just because you invited me this morning, and I do thank you for that, but of the place that I'm at this morning. For the last 2.5 years, Oxley College has been coming to Cambodia, and so members of your church, students have been coming to Cambodia. And I've been meeting them the last 2.5 years, but the history goes back a little bit before that. Actually, about 7 years, a little over 7 years ago, someone from the church here actually said, we want to take students somewhere and give them the opportunity to minister in another nation, but to be challenged as well. Little did they know that when they engaged Samaritan's Purse to start that relationship, it actually created some momentum and created a schools program where Australian school children from around the country began going to Cambodia, Vietnam, Fiji, with Samaritan's Purse. And over that time, over the last 7 years, what happened here was just one team launched out of your church and school has since impacted hundreds of Australian students from across the country. And in effect, then more importantly, impacting thousands of lives of children across the countries of Cambodia, Vietnam, and Fiji. This 2 months ago, we opened 5 new primary schools and started education programs. And much of that was to the credit of Australian schools. And so just as part of the church here, when I say I'm honored to be here, the reason is because of the heritage that this church has and this community has in impacting those nations. So I want to just say from the children of Cambodia, Vietnam, and Fiji, I want to say to you guys, I want to say thank you this morning. And thank the church in Cambodia says thank you to this morning. Well, just in saying that, I'm going to get on to talking about, I do want to introduce, they're not here this morning, but I definitely don't look Cambodian, do I? And I don't sound Cambodian. I am from the great state of Texas, love that. About 4 years ago, my wife and 3 boys and I, God spoke to us a little over 4 years ago and said it's time to move. Now, my wife was helping me in leading that charge, but to take 3 little boys at that time that were 5, 9, and 11 from a nation like America to Cambodia was a little bit frightening. You see, my wife and I both had great jobs. We had a great house, great vehicles. I had my 4-wheel drive truck with 4 doors in it, and loved it. And and before someone asks, yes, I do own a cowboy hat. I do own a pair of cowboy boots. My parents had an oil well in our backyard, and we did raise cattle. So moving from that was different. Moving to the nation of Cambodia, a nation that had been torn by civil war from 1975 to 1979. Actually, the war continued until 1997. But during that, a brutal reign of a group called the Khmer Rouge. During that period of time, 1 in every 4 people in Cambodia, they estimate that 1 out of every 4 people in Cambodia was either killed, died of starvation, or died of illness during that period of time. In that, it was an ultra-communist thought process where they actually, when they went into the country, actually eliminated all form of government. They eliminated the education system. They eliminated the medical system. And when I say eliminated, not do it just mean they dismantled buildings, which they did, but they actually killed the leaders of each of those institutions, which means doctors, nurses, school teachers. Those people either fled for their life out of the country or they were killed. Now, you can imagine what that would do to an entire country. And those are the kind of places that Samaritan's Purse goes into. We go into places like that to share the love of God in practical ways in places that have been devastated by natural disaster or war. Does it sound like the kind of place that you want to move to today? So I moved my wife and kids, and we moved over together to the country of Cambodia and started a journey. And so this morning, I'll talk a little bit about Samaritan's Purse so that I can tick the box with my boss. But mainly what I'm going to do this morning is I hope to, in our journey and our story and some of the things that I talk about, really encourage you this morning. And we're all here this morning to look at the Word of God and commune with God and see what God wants to speak to us this morning. So I hope just in sharing, I'm going to share a bit with you this morning in doing that. Got to Cambodia. Was there about a year and a half. The most part was just utter and complete shock, trying to understand the countries, trying to understand new culture, trying to fit into a new place. But about a year and a half in, about 2.5 years ago, then God really, at that point, I kind of got through the shock of things. And God really began to speak to me about me. He began to really, and I had thought, man, I listened to God and I went to Cambodia. I'm the superhero, right? And I began to think about my motives and really what was driving me even in that. And God began to speak to me. About 2.5 years ago, we were traveling out to do some assessments on some schools. And so we went about 8.5 hours drive on some good roads. We call them good in Cambodia. You wouldn't call them good here, but we call them good. About 8.5 hours on some good roads. Then we turned off on the bad road and went about 1.5 hours on the bad road through the mud. And we were hoping that we would make it there. And we went down for about 1.5 hours. We're traveling down this road. We make it towards the end of the road. And you kind of know in Cambodia, you know where your things are going from good to not so good to wow. Because as you're watching, you see the houses, you know, you kind of see the houses getting smaller and they turn from wooden to, you know, from concrete to wooden to whatever they could find. But you also notice you're watching the power lines. And when the power lines stop and the electricity stops, then you know that you're headed for. But we go out to this rural village and we pull up and we stop and we're going to go into the school. And as we start to walk into the school, there's 250 children in white shirts and blue pants. Standing and they're cheering as we walk in. Now, as we're walking through this group of kids, I'm thinking, man, what school must be here that the kids are lined up? They're cheering for us. I mean, this must be a dynamic place. So we're walking through and we're walking around and we come and we turn the corner. And at the end of the kids is the school building. Now we come up and we're starting to walk towards the kids, towards the school. And the closer we get to the school, I start to actually see the condition of it. I start wondering, I wish I could say I was wondering if the kids were going to be safe inside it. I actually started thinking, am I going to be safe inside it? We get up and we get close. We get inside the classroom and they usher me in and they're like, oh, teacher, we want you to teach. I was a math teacher background a long time ago in the U.S. was a math teacher for about 10 years. So I'm thinking, all right, I can do some quick math problems on the board. Walk into the classroom and as I'm getting ready, I'm trying to focus on the kids and think of what I'm doing. But I look down and I realize not just is the wooden building in the condition in, but it's dirt floors with massive cracks in the floor. So I get past that and I'm saying, okay, I'm going to get started teaching. So I step up to the blackboard and I'm standing at the blackboard and I start writing in chalk. I'm 2 + 2 = 4. Now, it's been a long time since I've seen or definitely use chalk. And so in doing that, it slipped from my hands and it fell down. So I'm looking at I look down and I'm trying to find the chalk. I think, where did it go? And then I realize it fell in what the cracks were big enough that the piece of chalk actually fell into one of the cracks. So then I'm trying to figure out how to come back from this because I just lost the piece of chalk that the teacher had to teach your class with. Now the teacher, I think she saw the horror on my face and, you know, the dilemma that I was in. And fortunately, she had another piece of chalk. So she brings the chalk, saves the day. And I'm sitting here again, trying to concentrate on doing a little math lesson. And I start looking through the cracks in the walls and I'm seeing the bush out beside the school. And I'm thinking, what would it be like to get up and teach like this every day? You see, I realize, and I'm looking at the makeup of the school, and I'm realizing this is not lumber that was brought from town. The villagers have, this is rough cut lumber that they've cut out of the trees surrounding to build a school. It's really, really, really hot in the room, and I'm sweating. And I get past the cracks in the floor, and the holes in the wall, and the rough cut lumber, and all of the things that I was stressed out about. And I start noticing the kiddos. And then I was like, okay, This is why I'm here. I'm focused. These are beautiful children. This has been a war-torn nation, but it is a beautiful country with amazing and beautiful children. So I start focusing on the children, start looking at the children, start realizing and thinking about their condition and looking at those. They're in their nice white uniforms, but I start noticing droopy eyes and discolored hair and start, you know, realizing some of them are sick. And I'm thinking, oh, wow. Now, to give you an idea, I've got 10 volunteers out here we've got that you guys come on up now? Come up here on the stage. You guys, that I need about 10 of you to come up. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what those children faced. If I was looking at the population of Cambodian children, I need 6 more. Our young people, young adults, not just children. Young, I got young people, young adults. Here we go. 4 more. Now, those of you who have the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. All right, I love it. All right. Now, I know a few of you have been, actually a couple of you have been on, 3 of you have been on trips before, right? And I know you're probably worried. The reason that they hesitated so much, and I don't know if Matt told you, but some of the things that I put in front of them to eat in Cambodia weren't exactly what you might. So they're a little bit apprehensive, I can tell, about everything. What is Wayne going to do to us this morning? Well, I'm going to let these guys represent the population of all of the Cambodian children. Now, I've got 10 up here. If I talked about it in reality, there's one that's missing. Normally, there would be an 11th or a 12th kid here, but in Cambodia, before the age of five, one out of 11 or 12 kids dies before they reach that age of 5. In Cambodia, if I were to look at children, 1, 2, 3, 4, you guys scoot this way just a bit. Those Cambodian school children that I was looking at in front of me, I understood and realized that 4 out of the 10 of them in the country would live with malnourishment. Okay, 4 out of the 10 of them would be what we call stunted, which means they don't have enough nutrition in their diet to grow to their proper size or their proper height. Now, we often think of that, and we see that physically, and we think, wow, they didn't grow to their physical height. But the reality is, in the first 1,000 days, if they don't get the proper nutrition that they need, there's irreversible intellectual damage and cognitive damage. They'll never actually grow to their proper potential in intellect. 4 out of 10 kids in the country of Cambodia. Another 4 out of 10 kids in Cambodia, when they get thirsty, now that looks all right to you. You drink that, right? Is it clean? That is clean, good, clean water. 6 out of 10 kids in Cambodia have access to that. The other 4 out of 10 kids in Cambodia, you want to drink that this morning? Would you
like a drink? I'm a bit, you know, I had a glass of water before, so I'm all right.
How about you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Well, what's wrong with that?
A little dirty?
Just a little. Not just a little. Thank you. All right, I won't make you drink that this morning. But in Cambodia, 4 out of 10 kids in Cambodia drink from water sources that are tainted. Okay? That means not only did they get sick, but they live sick their entire life. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You two, move this way just a bit. Whoa. Right there. You're good. 6 out of 10 kids in Cambodia, because of the education system in the country, will make it to the end of 6th grade and won't be able to read and write. 25% of the household income in Cambodia, 28% of the household income in Cambodia comes from children. They have to work to earn a living. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 out of 10 Cambodian children, just in the areas that we work in along the border and in this community, actually will travel illegally across a border with their family before they reach the 6th grade to work in another country to make money to provide for their family. Now, what are the overall effects of that? Well, one more thing, and this is the thing that that gets me the most. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 out of 10 Cambodian children don't have the opportunity to hear the gospel. They don't have the opportunity to have a loving relationship and know a risen Savior, Jesus Christ. Those things bug me a bit, and that's why I'm passionate. That's why I do what I do. But the effect of all of that is that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of 10 Cambodian children will drop out of school somewhere around the sixth grade, but definitely before they reach middle school. You six are awesome. You guys can go and have a seat. Thank you. 6 out of 10 kids. Another 2, I'm going to go with these guys. They look rougher, so I'm going to drop them out. All right. Another 2 out of the 10. 4 of them will make it to middle school, but 2 out of the 10 will either finish middle school and drop out, or during middle school will drop out. So thank you guys. They'll make it through grade 8, but then they finish up to go to work. That means 2 out of every 10 kids in Cambodia will actually go to high school and finish. If you're a male, you've got about a 95% chance that if you made it that far that you're going to finish. If you're a female, only 1 out of every 2 girls that actually make it to high school finish high school. Thanks, guys. Thank you. Now, I was sitting there and I was in this school and knowing the things that I knew, stopped and looking at these kids and it dawned on me that there were 45 kids and we were in a grade 2 classroom. There were 45 kids and they were sitting there and they were paying attention. And I stopped and I thought, given those odds, given those challenges, why are there 45 kids in this classroom? How did this happen? So a few minutes later, I went and talked to the principal, and I was talking to him, and I realized he had an orderly school. There were kids, they were there, they were trying to learn, there's building. So I'm talking to the principal. I said, "Principal, tell me your story." He said, "Wayne," he said, "I came here 14 years ago." He said, "When I came here, there was no school, there weren't roads." He said, "We just came out here to the village, and the government sent me out here to start a school." So I started a school underneath the house. He said, "We started with some kids. It started growing because when they realized there was a school, kids started coming." And he said, "Pretty soon I convinced the village to build a wooden school." We built a wooden school. During the rainy season, there was lightning. It caught the bush on fire and it burned the school down. So we built another school and another one. We built a wooden school again. The next year, the same thing happened. He said, "That time we learned our lesson." So we cleared the area out around the school, and then we built. This is the third wooden school that we've built. He said, "But something more than that happened." He said, "While I was in the process of doing that," he said, "this gentleman showed up." He said, "This is Pastor Soksaran. Pastor Soksaran is a church planner. Pastor Soksaran used to drive out on his motorcycle to the edge of the jungle. He'd stop and he'd park it and then he'd walk inside and he would walk out to these schools. He'd walk out to these communities and share the gospel." And the principal said, during that period of time when all of that was going on, when I first came out here to teach, he came out and he shared the gospel with me. And he said, "Wayne," he said, "it transformed my life. And I began to realize that this community and these children was where God was calling me." Not only did the principal get saved, not only did the young man that was teaching, who later became principal, get saved, a guerrilla soldier who had been fighting, who fought for the king's army, who became the village leader, who was one of the village leaders, also accepted Christ and became a local church pastor. So for 14 years, they've been working in that community, and in a nation where 90% of the kids don't have the opportunity to hear the gospel, 100% of the children in that village, year after year, generation after generation, have gotten a chance to hear the gospel. Now, I stopped and I began to think back on my life and my journey to Cambodia and everything that I'd done. And I began to think, wow, this man, he could have actually left that community. He could have, after 2 years, his government stint was up. He could have went to a provincial town and gotten a lot better job, a lot better income, and a lot better community. But he chose to stay. And I began to ask myself the question, what's been driving me? And am I been looking at just trying to be successful in life? Or is my goal to be significant? And if success comes, great. If it doesn't, great. And I realized I'd been driven a lot more by success than I had about significance. I was actually convicted by the example of this principal in this school. Now, by that time I'm just going to read with you Luke chapter 7, verses 36 through 50. Luke chapter 7, verse 36 through 50. And I read this story, and I'm going to read this to you this morning. It says, one of the Pharisees, talking about Jesus, asked him to eat with him. And he went into the Pharisee's house and took his place at the table. And behold, a woman of the city who was a sinner, when she learned that she was reclining at the table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment. And standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair of her head and kissed his feet and anointed him with his ointment. Now, when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this was and this is and who is touching him. For she is a sinner. And Jesus answered him, saying, Simon, I have something to say to you. And he answered, say it, teacher. I love this. Jesus was showing Simon that he was a prophet, but he was proving that he was a prophet, but was disproving the religious idea of what a prophet was supposed to look like. And Jesus said them a story. A certain moneylender had two debts. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they could not pay, he canceled the debt of both. Now, which of them will love him more? Simon answered, the one, I suppose, for whom he canceled the larger debt. And he said to him, you have judged rightly. Then turning toward the woman, he said to Simon, do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet, but she had wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she has anointed my feet with ointment. Therefore, I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But he who is forgiven little loves little. And he said to her, your sins are forgiven. Then those who were at the table with him began to say among themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? And he said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. When I read that story, I began to ask myself, which one was I in the story? Because I looked at these two people and I was thinking, which one of those two people really was driven by success and which one was driven by doing something significant? And I began to realize, I stopped and think about the motives of the Pharisee. He wanted Jesus to come into his home. Why did the Pharisee want Jesus to come into his home? Have you ever thought about that? I mean, we think about the point of this story is very much centered around Christ, his love, around his forgiveness. But I stopped and asked myself, why did the Pharisee ask him to come into his home? Now, maybe he wanted to get closer to Jesus. Maybe he saw something. Maybe he wanted to get closer to God. But does the experience and what Jesus says to him and what Jesus discerns in him, does it show that? Maybe not so much. I began to think, what was his motive? Maybe the Pharisee knew that the other Pharisees were after Jesus, and if he could get him in his home and get Jesus to say or do something, then they could give it Jesus, and guess what? The Pharisee could move up the ladder. Man, maybe if I could catch Jesus in saying something, I could move up the Pharisaical ladder. Maybe he had another motive. Maybe he wanted attendance at the synagogue to grow, and he thought, you know what? I'll get a cool guy, a cool speaker to come in. I'll get him to come into my house. And if he comes into my house and people that follow him see him with me, then maybe attendance will increase. Now, you might say, well, where do you get all of that from? Did you do a study on that? No, I've been a pastor and a leader in churches for decades. I just thought about the sinful thoughts processes that had been in my mind from time to time. And I thought about, wow, what would have driven me to ask Jesus into my home? The cool thing at the bottom of that is we know the lady who was the sinner, she just passionately wanted to know God and be with Christ. At the end of the day, she wanted something significant. She wanted love. She wanted relationship with God. And at the end of that verse, Jesus said to the woman, he said, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. You see, those who go after significance in life and relationship with God, what do they walk out? They walk out with peace. Those who are striving only or first for success, Jesus didn't say go in peace. I look back at these two gentlemen here and I think, what have they been striving for the last 14 years? If they wanted success, they would have left the village. But they've wanted to live a life of significance and bringing the message of Christ to these children for 14 years. They've lived. Now, I will tell you that the day that I met Principal Mensarith, his two-year-old child. When we came to the school, his wife and two-year-old child were there and had an intravenous drip into him. His child was suffering from typhoid because of the water conditions in their village. A cool thing is that as we saw what the community was doing, Samaritan's Purse jumped in and said, we want to help you. We want to work along beside you. The community began saving money, began hauling in dirt, began bringing in soil to they were planning on building a concrete school. We helped them accelerate that just a bit. In June, we were just out and had the grand opening. We replaced that wooden building with this new 6-room primary school. And it was this, there were 4 villages around that came together to celebrate. And I thank God that God has been seeing the prayers of that principal and of those students. He was chasing after what was significant. And God's honored that. Seek you first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. In that same school, we've brought in educational supplies and resources. And for the first time, children in that village are seeing resources that they'll have. When they leave that village, they're going to be able to read. They'll be able to write in their own language when they finish primary school. Whoop. Now, when we talk about the issues that Cambodian children face, the Samaritan's Purse, we build schools, we put in educational supplies. Oxley's actually been a part of some of that over the years. We've put in clean water so that children don't drink water like this in their school. We put in toilet blocks in school buildings. We go into homes and put like 3,000 biosand filters in homes. So 3,000 families last year got clean water. We do maternal and child health and nutrition projects. We do livelihood projects so the families in the communities have the opportunity to do livelihoods so that 8 out of 10 kids doesn't have to travel across the border illegally to work, but can earn a living and earn an income in their own home. And then finally, because people like you, churches like you, schools like Oxley, every year also do something that's fun. They pack Operations Christmas shoeboxes. And I'm going to give you guys haven't ever got to be a part of a distribution. You may have packed shoeboxes, but this morning I'm going to let you guys be a part of one of those distributions for just a second. Is that all right? We take a clip real quick. So here's the shoebox distribution. Watch right in the middle of the crowd. Don't you love the noise? There's a pump, don't worry. Now, I will tell you that every shoebox distribution is just like that. The squeals, the noise, the excitement, and the kids are just, they can't believe it. They're on complete overstimulation, so it's amazing, okay? But after that was over with, after that distribution was over with, I was walking around, I was talking to those boys. I said, man, you guys got really excited. Everybody, and you noticed he kept it within arm's length. And they were like, well, yeah. So he said, the reason he got so excited and he lifted it up for all the boys to see was because now our village has the soccer ball. And now today we can all play soccer. Whenever you pack a shoebox, you guys have done that. Those boxes are packed with love. We also have the opportunity to share the gospel. One more quick story. I know it's time to go, but one more quick story. I was with a group of students from Australia recently, and we were out in a village in a school doing a distribution. And this little lady, after we finished the distribution, the Australian students were kind of bummed out. They were actually really kind of bummed because when the kids had opened the shoeboxes, they were just chock full of school supplies. And the Australian students were, there was no clothes and there were no toys, these poor kids. And I was a little bit bummed and I was figuring out how am I going to, you know, toys didn't get in them. And they're kind of bummed out. Well, this little old lady comes over and she grabs me, she's dragging me. And I'm like, where is she taking me? And about that time she stops and she's mad at me. She's like, points at all the students and she does this. And I realize, okay, I said, guys, come with me. And so we got 15 Australian students following me and they're all asking the question, where are we going? I don't know. Just follow the little old lady. So we start following the little old lady. We go a little bit further. We go into a schoolroom, and she's over, and she's chattering in the corner. Bah, 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 bah. And the kids are all, Wayne, what is she saying? I have no idea. Just nod your head and smile. I'm thinking, where's my interpreter, right? She pulls us over, and we go around this small wooden teacher's desk, and there's 15 people. She drags every one of the students over, and they're like, where are we going? I don't know. Just nod your head and smile. Pulls open the door. She's pointing. And about that time, the interpreter walks in. I was like, hey, help me out here. He comes over, and I said, what's she saying? He said, Wayne, it's just real simple. She said, she's a teacher in this school. She says, in the morning, she has 40 kids in her morning class, and she has 40 kids in the afternoon class. And he said, she's pointing to three pencils in the drawer. He says, all 40 kids in both classes share those three pencils. He said, this is a remote rural village, and the kids in this community are poor and can't afford or can't get access to school supplies. And he said that she had been praying, and she'd been gathering a group of children and praying that God would provide school supplies for these children. And she's just telling you thank you this morning because you were the answer to prayer. And this morning, God supplied school supplies for an entire year for these school children and for this community. Just to say again, thank you this morning for what you do. I mean, you know, as you go out this week, I'm not here recruiting people to go to Cambodia. I am this morning, though, as you leave out today, think about the route that I'm headed. What is first? Is it significance or is it success? And at the end of the day, significance may lead to the road to success, but success itself, where does it really lead? Success, John Maxwell said this. He says, success can last a lifetime. Significance can last several lifetimes. Success asks, how can I add value to myself? Significant asks, how can I add value to others? He said, my evolution from selfishness to significance was something like this. First, I asked the question, what can others do for me? Then I asked the question, what can I do for myself? Finally, I moved to, wait a minute, what can I do for others? But ultimately, the question became, and where God led me was, what can I do with others, for others? If I pursue success if I pursue success, my joy is the result of my success. If I pursue significance, my joy is the result of others' success. I want to thank you guys for having me this morning. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for everything your partnership with Samaritan's Purse and with Operations Christmas Child. And may you be blessed this week. Amen. Thank you.